This presentation is on the nonlinear behaviour of a ducted premixed flame. My name is Matthew Juniper. This work was done mainly by Kartik Kashyap with help from Ian Waugh, both of whom are PhD students at Cambridge, and using a numerical code developed by Santosh Hemchandra, who is now at the Indian Institute of Science in Bangalore. So here's what happens when you put a premixed flame inside a duct. That's a premixed flame, a few hundred watts. And in a moment, I'll take an empty tube and put it on the top. And you get really quite a loud noise. This noise arises because of feedback between the acoustic waves inside the duct and heat release fluctuations at the flame. Here we're looking at another experiment done by Nada Karimi and Kartik Kashyap at Cambridge, where we videoed a flame inside a transparent duct once it had started to oscillate. The acoustic waves are causing the pressure and the velocity inside the duct to fluctuate. The fluctuations of the velocity, particularly at the flame holder, cause the flame itself to oscillate and to wrinkle, and that causes the heat release to oscillate as well. The things to note here are that the flame is cuspy, it forms cusps, and that it also pinches off. It's our aim to model this premixed flame, and in order to model it well, we therefore wanted to capture the cuspiness of the flame and the pinch-off of the flame. The cuspiness and the pinch-off of the flame can be seen even more clearly in this image from EM2C at École Centrale in Paris. In this case, the flame is not inside a duct, but it's being forced acoustically upstream with a loudspeaker, and you can see the flame rolling up around here, forming cusps around the midpoint, and then pinching off towards the top. It's also possible to see here a secondary instability developing on top of the cusps, but that's not the focus of this study. In this study, we will confine ourselves to considering two-dimensional perturbations, and later on we will extend it to axisymmetric ones. So we want to model this type of flame inside a duct. Now, there will be two parts to our model. There's the acoustics, and then there's the flame dynamics. I'm going to start by describing the acoustics. So in our model, we have a base flow U0, and then on top of that, we have an acoustic velocity U, and we have an acoustic pressure P. These are both functions of x, which is the distance along the duct, and time. In our simple model, there are some simple constraints on the acoustic velocity and the acoustic pressure. These are that at the upstream end of the duct, and at the downstream end of the duct, the velocity gradient must be zero, and the pressure fluctuation must be zero. So we can discretize the velocity and pressure fluctuations into basis functions that are made up of what I will loosely call organ pipe modes. So the first one, shown below, is the fundamental. The second one, which has exactly the same boundary conditions but half the wavelength, is the first harmonic. The next one, shown here, has the same boundary conditions but one third of the wavelength, and that's the second harmonic. And in our model, we continue right up to the 19th harmonic, so that we have 20 modes in total. What we do then is follow the amplitude of these modes, so U1, U2, all the way up to U20, and similarly P1, P2, all the way up to P20, and this creates a state space model for our acoustics. Now these, of course, are all functions of time, and from them we can calculate the acoustic velocity and the acoustic pressure at the flame. Now the fluctuating acoustic velocity at the flame causes the flame to wrinkle, and we model that with the flame model, which I'll explain in a moment. But that wrinkling of the flame changes the heat release at the flame, and then that heat release feeds in to the acoustic energy equation. And this is how we get our coupling between the acoustics and the heat release at the flame. So that's a summary of the acoustic model. It's worth pointing out that we make the compact flame assumption. which is that the flame is small compared with the wavelength of the acoustics, so that we can consider there is just one acoustic velocity at the flame. In other words, the flame takes up a very small amount of space within the duct. This is a reasonable assumption for long wavelengths and low frequencies, but in a more realistic model we would look to relax that assumption. To simulate the flame, we use a G-equation model. This is what's known as a level set approach. We define some function G, which is a function of space, x and y, and we say that in the reactants, G is less than zero, but in the products, G is greater than zero, and so the flame can be found at the point where G is equal to zero. And we can then write an equation for the evolution of G. So G changes with time, according to this expression, where we can see here is the convection of G, and the right-hand side models the fact that the flame is always moving from the products towards the reactants, so at some speed, which is given by this flame speed SL. So this term on the right-hand side models the combustion. And we then work out the heat release by finding out how much of the reactants have combusted within a certain time. So this is a function of the density of the reactants, the flame speed, the enthalpy of reaction, and terms involving G. And then this heat release rate feeds into the acoustic energy equation, as I described on the previous slide. So that describes how G evolves with time, and how we get the heat release from the evolution of G with time. But there's one more thing that we need to impose, which is the velocity field here. To calculate the velocity field, we take as an input the acoustic velocity. This comes from the acoustic model, and it's a function of time only. We then say that these velocity perturbations convect down the flame domain at some speed uc. And this convection velocity is not quite equal to the mean velocity within the duct. In this case, we actually found it by doing DNS of a similar flame and measuring the velocity at which the perturbations convected through the flame domain. And then, having imposed the axial velocity perturbations u, we then calculate the cross-stream velocity perturbations v by imposing continuity. Now, we've made a rather dangerous but very common assumption here, which is that the heat released from the flame does not affect the velocity field. And we've done this in order to create a sufficiently simple model that we can handle it with a fairly small number of degrees of freedom, by which I mean a small number of variables in the state vector. I think that this assumption and this velocity model are probably the weakest points in the model, but we make them in order to capture the important physics, which is the fluctuation of the flame down the domain, within a model that's sufficiently simple that we can simulate it on a computer quite quickly. So here's the outcome of the flame model. In this case, we are forcing from upstream sinusoidally. We haven't yet put this flame inside the duct. But you can see that the flame, which is shown in red, is cuspy, and that it pinches off at the end, which are the two features that we particularly wanted to capture. And so let's compare a still of that video on the right with the experimental results from EM2C in France. And you can see that we capture many of the important features. First of all, roll up around the base of the flame, then the cuspiness of the flame as it wrinkles, convecting downstream, and finally, very importantly, the pinch-off. The pinch-off is particularly important because this results in a very sharp increase of heat release as that flame that is pinched off suddenly combusts. And this feeds strongly into the acoustics. So now we put that flame inside the duct and allow it to reach a self-excited state. I'll talk about all of these charts in a moment, but I want to start by focusing on the top one. On the horizontal axis is the time, and on the vertical axis is the velocity at the flame normalized by the mean velocity in the duct. And you can see that we start at time zero from the non-oscillating steady state. But this turns out to be unstable, So we get here exponential growth, followed by attraction towards a limit cycle. In the right-hand half of this image, we show the time as well on the horizontal axis, but we've expanded the scale so that here it goes from 200 to 205, whereas in the left-hand half it went from 0 to 200. And here we see the shape of the velocity signal at the flame. The first thing to note is that it is clearly not sinusoidal, and that's important because many models of flames at limit cycles assume that the velocity fluctuation is sinusoidal, but it is nonetheless reassuringly periodic. And before we look at the three charts at the bottom of this slide, I think it's worth looking at a video of what this flame looks like. So here we're looking at the flame in red of this self-excited thermoacoustic system once it has reached a limit cycle. If you look carefully, you can see that every cycle is exactly the same as the one before, so it's periodic. But you can also see that the flame is cuspy and that it's pinching off. In this particular case, the duct is quite long, so the natural frequency is quite low, and this is why we're getting just roughly one wavelength per length of the flame, whereas in the video I showed before, there were several wavelengths over the length of the flame, and this was because we were forcing it at a higher frequency. And now let's return to the slide that I showed before, which is of the velocity of the flame as a function of time. The chart on the bottom left shows the power spectral density of the velocity signal from time 200 up to some much higher time. On the horizontal axis, we have the non-dimensional frequency. On the vertical axis, we have the power spectral density. And we see a strong peak at the fundamental frequency. But because this signal is very non-harmonic, very non-sinusoidal, we get quite significant peaks at other frequencies, which are the harmonics of the fundamental frequency. The bottom middle figure shows the velocity of the flame, u, as a function of time, which we've relabeled x, plotted against itself with some time delay tau and another time delay 2 tau, where we find tau using the Takens embedding theorem. Now this allows us to represent our system, which has a few thousand degrees of freedom, as a system that has 3 degrees of freedom, which is a very useful visual tool. And in this case, we can see that the system goes around a loop such that if it starts at one particular point in the loop, it goes round, and within one period it has returned to the same point. The chart on the bottom right of this figure shows a slice through the phase portrait. And the system passes through that slice at 2 points, one there and one there, and these correspond to the 2 points in that Poincaré section in the chart at the bottom right. And this is also a very useful way to visualize the behavior of the system. So this is for the case where the flame is sitting 20% of the distance along the tube. Just to draw a little diagram of that, if the flow of air is coming in the bottom and out of the top, the flame is sitting around here such that x of the flame is equal to 0.2. What we're going to do next is move the flame from a position of 0.2 up to a position of 0.4. And this chart shows exactly the same information, but for the flame at position of 0.4 rather than 0.2. Once again, on the horizontal axis of the top figure, we have the time from 0 to 200, and then from 200 to 210. On the vertical axis, we have the velocity of the flame, u, non-dimensionalized by the mean velocity. And as before, we start from the steady state, which is unstable, and so we get exponential growth towards oscillations. This time, however, we don't see a simple growth towards a limit cycle. We see growth to a very large amplitude here, and then decay towards another type of attractor, in this case a quasi-periodic attractor. If we look at the signal from time 200 to time 210, you can see that this signal is very definitely oscillating, but it is not repeating itself. It's not periodic. And if we go back to the signal from 0 to 200, you can see that actually there is a low frequency component there as well. And if you were to listen to this in a real experiment, you would hear a sort of wow 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 noise. If we look now at the power spectral density, we see a peak around the fundamental frequency, but in this particular case the first harmonic has a higher power spectral density, and then there are plenty of peaks around the higher harmonics. But the most interesting thing to note is that just here we have another peak at a very low frequency. And this is what we can see in the time series on the top figure. Now, if we draw the phase portrait of this in the middle picture at the bottom, it's actually quite difficult to interpret. The phase is rotating around in the directions I've just shown, but from this picture we can't see very much. So instead we take a slice through that picture and we get the Poincaré section in the bottom right figure, and we see quite clearly that the intersection of this phase portrait with that plane gives us two loops in the Poincaré section. And that shows us that the phase portrait here is simply a torus, and the system is going around the surface of this torus without ever quite repeating itself. Now, this behaviour is known as quasi-periodic. It's quite common in dynamical systems, so it should be no surprise that we see it in a thermoacoustic system. But it's important to point out that many models of thermoacoustic oscillations assume periodic behaviour at the outset, and so they would not be able to predict this type of behaviour. In experiments on thermoacoustic systems, however, this type of behaviour has been seen a few times. On the left is a paper by Lipika Kabiraj and R.I. Sujit in IIT Madras, where they see, amongst other things, quasi-periodic behaviour. And on the right is a paper by Hiroshi Kotuda et al., where they also see quasi-periodic as well as chaotic behaviour. So it's pleasing that this type of behaviour has been seen in experiments, but that now we've managed to develop a model that also shows this type of behaviour. So now I'm going to show a video of the phase portrait and the Poincaré section as we move the flame from halfway down the tube to a position close to the entry. And as the flame moves back, we see lots of interesting types of behaviour. The results I'm about to show were made from very many simulations. Each of these simulations was started from the flame at rest. This is important because, as we will see later, there is often more than one state in which the system can end up, and the state in which it actually ends up depends on the initial condition. I'm going to let the video run in silence, and then afterwards I will comment on the behaviour of the flame at particular flame positions. So here's what happens at a flame position of 0.3. If we look at the time series to start with from 0 to 200, we see that we start off at the steady state, but it's unstable, so we get exponential growth initially to quite a large amplitude. Then this decays, and in the final steady state for large time, we end up with a rather curious behavior. It's clearly oscillating, but there are two peaks in each cycle and two troughs. If we look at the phase portrait, we can see that the system is tracing out what looks like almost a figure of eight, and it's seen most clearly in the Poincaré section, where we see that there are four intersections of the phase portrait with the plane through which we take the Poincaré section. Now, this is known as period doubling, and let's have a look at what the flame is actually doing. So this is what the flame looks like when it's placed at XF equals 0.3, and if you look very carefully, you can see that every second cycle repeats itself, so this is what we know as period doubling. At XF equals 0.286, which is very close to 0.3, we see a different type of behaviour. If we look at the time series from 0 to 200, again we have, starting from the steady state, exponential growth towards a different sort of attractor. This time, if you look very carefully at the time series, it is repeating itself every so often, but it's clearly not a simple periodic behaviour. If we trace out the phase portrait here, we see that after very many cycles, it's traced out just a single loop, but it's a loop that seems to overlap itself here about five times. And if we look at the Poincaré section, you can see a number of discrete points in that Poincaré section. And here is a video of the flame during this frequency-locked behaviour. You'd have to look at it very carefully now to see that it's repeating itself every few cycles. Nonetheless, you can see that much of the qualitative behaviour is the same as before. The flame is very cuspy, and it's pinching off, particularly at the top end of the flame. And here's what the behaviour looks like at XF equals 0.047, so very close to the upstream end of the tube. If we look at the time series again, we start off from the steady state, but it's unstable, so we get exponential growth. But this time we get growth towards an attractor that's altogether different from the ones we've seen before. First of all, if we look at this time series over here, we can see that although it's oscillating, it's never repeating itself. Now, the quasi-periodic case didn't repeat itself either, but the big difference between this and the quasi-periodic case can be seen in the phase portrait and in the Poincaré section. So in the phase portrait, we can see that the phase is tracing out what looks like a solid lump in phase space. When we take a slice through it, we see that's exactly what it is. Instead of the state being nicely on the surface of a torus, it's now filling up that torus. And this is a signature of chaotic behaviour. Now, you might expect the flame to be behaving rather erratically during this chaotic behaviour, but qualitatively it's doing exactly the same as it was doing before. We still see cuspiness, we see the flame pinching off. I think if you look carefully you can see that the flame is a bit more wrinkled than it was when we had nice periodic or quasi-periodic behaviour. Nonetheless, qualitatively, it's much the same as before. So what I'm going to do now is wait for the system to reach its steady state, then let it evolve for another few hundred cycles, and then I will plot the peaks of UF and the troughs of UF. So for the period doubling case, I will see two peaks and two troughs. On the other hand, for the quasi-periodic case, I will see a series of peaks and a series of troughs, never quite overlapping with themselves. For the frequency-locked behaviour, I will see a bunch of peaks that repeat themselves, and the same is true, of course, of the troughs. And the chaotic case is going to look pretty much chaotic. And here is what we obtain. We see that from where we started, which is around 0.5, to around this point here, we have nice periodic behaviour. At XF around 0.44, we get transition to quasi-periodic behaviour, and then around 0.42 we jump to what looks like a different attractor. In this case we have just here some frequency-locked behaviour, but then it quickly becomes quasi-periodic again. And at the jump around 0.42, we see a change in the dominant frequency of the oscillation. It shifts from a mode 1 to a mode 2. Now at around 0.35, this quasi-periodic behavior becomes periodic again, but then around 0.31 we get period doubling. Now rather than explain everything else, I'm now going to jump towards this region, because this is the region in which we see chaotic behavior. And that is interspersed with quasi-periodic and with frequency-locked behavior as well. Now what I find particularly interesting about this slide is that we see that simple periodic behavior is really quite unusual. At most flame positions, the behavior is either quasi-periodic, chaotic, or frequency-locked. And if I repeat the simulations, but starting this time from a different initial condition, I find that at some values of XF, I can have more than one final state. For example, between about 0.11 and 0.2, in this region here, I can either be at a periodic solution involving the first mode, or a quasi-periodic solution involving the second mode. And the state I end up at depends on the initial condition that I started with. And once again, we see that simple periodic behavior is the exception rather than the rule. So to summarize, we actually set out to create a simple thermoacoustic model that could achieve a stable limit cycle. That was the motivation for this work. We used simple duct acoustics and a G-equation flame model with around 4,000 degrees of freedom. I think the weakest point of the model is in the velocity field, and this is the part that we will endeavor to improve. Nonetheless, it has all the important physics that we want, which is velocity fluctuations convected up through the flame, and these fluctuations are caused by the acoustic velocity at the base of the flame. Although this model is relatively simple, it exhibits periodic, biperiodic, frequency-locked, quasi-periodic, and chaotic behavior. These are all the types of behavior that have been seen in experiments on thermoacoustic systems, and we've been able to repeat them with this relatively simple model. The nice thing is, it's a really useful tool that can be extended to more complex flame geometries and also to more complex acoustic geometries as well.